طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, a discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian voice, the Palestinian narrative, from a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. And that is why it is so important that we present it each week on This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts. The following is from the Mondo Weiss News Service. 14 congressional people led by Bernie Sanders and Jamal Bowman sent a historic letter to President Biden and his Secretary of State calling on them to undertake a shift in U.S. policy in recognition of the systematic violence against Palestinians and begin to condition aid to Israel to ensure that all future foreign assistance is not used in support of gross violations of human rights. The letter signed by the 14 establishes a firm grounding for Palestinian human rights inside the Congress. It includes the Squad and more traditional progressives, but also new representatives, Summer Lee of Pittsburgh and Dalia Ramirez of Chicago. The 14 are part of the sea change in U.S. attitudes towards Israel, its own advocates acknowledge. The letter's civil society supporters include 35 diverse progressive groups, plus a statement from several Jewish community leaders that numbers some from the liberal Zionist movement. Their presence demonstrates the momentous shift that is taking place inside the Jewish community away from support for Israel. No wonder that AIPAC has been attacking the letter by trying to undermine Bowman's Jewish support inside his district. Bowman has cut a higher and higher profile as an advocate for progressive values in New York. These 14 members of Congress are showing that there is a rapidly growing progressive flank in the Congress that refuses to allow a progressive exception for Palestine. The Congress people deplore actions of Netanyahu's new right-wing government, including the annexation of Palestinian land and settler violence. Israel is in a clear violation of international law and commitments made to the U.S., they said, and its agenda will further devastate Palestinian communities. Only clear steps to change political conditions will pave the way for peace. They point out that all the U.S. entreaties for equal measures of freedom, dignity, security, and prosperity for both Israelis and Palestinians have had no effect on Israel. Bernie Sanders has followed through on his declaration to Face the Nation in February that the U.S. should cut aid to Israel over its racist government. Wrote Sanders, "I think we've got to put some strings attached to that and say you cannot run a racist government. You cannot turn your back on a two-state solution. You cannot demean the Palestinian people there. You just can't do it and then come to America and ask for money." The letter reflects the political awareness not just that there should be legislative consequences of Israel's behavior, but that such actions are popular, as evidenced by the Gallup poll, showing that Democrats are more sympathetic to Palestinians than Israelis for the first time and by a sizable margin of 49-38. The Democratic leadership is out of touch with what is actually possible and what most voters want. This is the direction people are moving in. The Democratic leadership, if they want to keep up, they need to change course. Bowman and Sanders were joined by Representatives Cori Bush, Andre Carson, Bonnie Watson Coleman, Raul Grijalva, Summer Lee, Betty Collum, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, Delia Ramirez, and Rashid Tlaib. The list of organizations supporting the letter is a broad swath of the left. It includes Palestinian groups, Muslim groups, Christian groups, and groups involved in the U.S. racial justice issues such as the Sunrise Movement, Justice Democrats, the Working Families Party, and a movement for Black Lives. Though Sanders is the only senator to sign, the Senate is surely cognizant of the change in attitude. Witness recent statements by Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy and Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen suggesting that USAID not support human rights violations in Palestine. Also note that Americans for Peace Now, APN, continues to demonstrate leadership from within the Jewish establishment, though J Street can't bring itself to go so far. Americans for Peace Now has insisted that this is about Palestinian human rights and even said it is apartheid. APN's statement on the congressional letter spoke of a systematic violence. Quote, despite U.S. diplomatic efforts and in violation of public promises to the administration, Benjamin Netanyahu's government continues to take steps to advance annexation of the West Bank and continues its systematic violation of Palestinian rights. It is clear that the United States must go beyond verbal statements of disapproval. APN's president and CEO, Hadar Suskind, said, quote, it is clear that the United States can no longer rely on diplomatic promises from Prime Minister Netanyahu. At a minimum, we must ensure that our aid to Israel is in compliance with existing U.S. laws and not being used to violate human rights. I'm grateful to Congressman Bowman, Senator Sanders, and their colleagues on Capitol Hill for taking a stand with this important letter. Unquote. The letter got star billing in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, which said that the letter urges a foundational shift in Biden's approach to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in Progressive's most significant missive to date against the Israeli government since Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right coalition assumed power. But there is a long way to go. The House leadership, particularly Hakeem Jeffries, is a raging Zionist, an anti-progressive force that represents a significant challenge for those who seek a change in our relationship to apartheid Israel. But there is growing hope in the Democratic caucus. Okay, moving on. The most successful weapon of resistance used by the Palestinians in their asymmetrical struggle with Israel has been the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, BDS. So successful that the Israeli lobby is spending millions of dollars to destroy it through a state legislative campaign to make BDS, in effect, illegal in every state in the Union. This morning, in an Electronic Intifada podcast, We examine this assault on Palestinian resistance as well as an assault on the First Amendment to the United States Constitution.
There are a number of examples of how boycotts have been used effectively, where people withhold their money, withhold their labor, withhold their time until things change. And to have a proliferation of bills that are criminalizing or penalizing that is really, really troubling and problematic.
I was just opening my annual contract from the state of Arizona, and I was rather shocked to see this.
In order to get our money, we have to pledge not to boycott Israel.
Like, what does the state of Israel have to do with Texas and elementary school?
Basically, all it says is contractor warrants he does not and will not participate in a boycott of Israel as defined by, and it gives the law a number.
When people actually understand what the state is doing here, they would be absolutely horrified and appalled that could be trading away Americans' First Amendment rights so easily.
Hello and welcome back to the Electronic Intifada podcast. That was a trailer for the documentary film Boycott. We continue our focus on legislative attempts to crush the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign for Palestinian rights in the U.S. In February, the U.S. Supreme Court decided not to hear an appeal to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling last year that boycotts of Israel are not protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The American Civil Liberties Union, representing one of our guests today, had appealed to the country's top court, hoping to reverse a 2017 Arkansas law that required the state to create a blacklist of companies that boycott Israel and forced public entities to divest from blacklisted companies. The part of the law at issue in this case was the requirement that state contractors provide written certification that they do not and will not boycott Israel. That law was first struck down in 2021 when the Eighth Circuit Court ruled that it was unconstitutional because it was an attempt by a government body to compel political speech. But shortly after, a bigger panel of judges from the same court reversed the decision. With the Supreme Court deciding not to hear the appeal, the Eighth Circuit Court's decision now stands. The ruling focused on a case brought by our guest, Alan Leverett, the publisher of the Arkansas Times, who was required to declare that the newspaper would not boycott Israel as a condition of receiving state contracts. 35 U.S. states have passed measures condemning or attempting to restrict the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS, campaign for Palestinian rights. Encouraged by Israel lobby groups and the Israeli government itself, politicians claim that refusing to purchase Israeli products and criticizing Israel's human rights violations or its state ideology, Zionism, is tantamount to anti-Jewish bigotry. Joining us to talk about the significance of the Arkansas law standing in direct violation of the First Amendment and how this affects the movement for Palestinian rights in the U.S. is Alan Leverett, publisher of the Arkansas Times, and Suhad Baba, producer of the documentary film Boycott, which is a fantastic deep dive into the fight against these anti-BDS measures and is now out on streaming platforms. We'll tell you how you can watch the film coming up. But first, Alan and Suhad, thank you so much for being with us today on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you for having us, Nora.
Thank you for having us, Nora.
Thanks for being here. Let's dive into the current situation around the U.S. Supreme Court deciding not to hear your appeal, Alan, over the Eighth Circuit Court's ruling last year. This allows the decision to keep this draconian law on the books. Walk us through the last few years since your refusal to sign essentially a loyalty oath to Israel in order to receive state contracts or advertisements for your local newspaper, up to what happened last month. And if you could lay out the details of the 2017 law and how it affected you.
Okay. Well, it just sort of came out of the blue. I mean, we're an intensely local publication. We don't address international issues anywhere in our magazine. We're about Arkansas history, culture, politics. It's an Arkansas magazine. But the legislature passed this bill along with many other legislatures requiring that we pledge, basically take a political position not to boycott Israel in return for to be able to continue receiving advertising from colleges, universities, health departments, state entities. And we have a policy. We've been going, this is our 49th year. We've never taken a political position in return for advertising dollars, and we're not prepared to start now. And so we at first we just ignored it. We thought, you know, there's Think of the hundreds of thousands of transactions that state government does every month. Sheetrock hangers, paper, copiers, advertising. And we just assumed there was no way they could enforce such a law. And but there was one purchasing agent at a college that was going to not let it go, and he didn't. And so we started losing our contract, and when we did, we sued. And for us, we're not boycotting Israel. I mean, some for your listeners, viewers, we are doing this strictly on First Amendment grounds. You can't tell us what to say. And so we sued the state and we lost. And so that's the state maintained that boycotting is an economic activity and is therefore an economic activity. Therefore, the state can regulate economic activity. And so that's the line that the court bought. It conflicts with my ninth grade civics book dramatically. So, anyway, that's where we are.
Thanks for that. Yeah.
Make one point real quickly. This only applies in the states under the Eighth Circuit. So it's about eight or nine states. We have won. This position has carried the day. Our position has carried the day in every other court in the United States, except for in the Eighth Circuit. So the anti-BDS laws have been overturned or been watered down, changed, whatever, in every other state that this has come up, that this has been challenged at. So we've only lost in the Eighth Circuit. We have not lost in the country.
Right. And the Supreme Court decided not to hear your case. Are there any plans to bring this up again? What's the next step here?
Well, for us, it's damage control. I mean, we're not a wealthy organization. We started on $200 in capital in 1974. So right now, it's just damage control. We're not signing the pledge. We've made that clear. And so there's this weird quirk in the law that says that it's in the interest of the state of Arkansas that all contractors pledge not to boycott Israel, except if they'll give the state a 20% discount. And if we'll give the state a 20% discount on whatever the product is, then we can go on. We can continue to boycott Israel, and that's just fine. So basically, I got to tip the state of Arkansas like I tip my waiter. And if I give them a 20%, I tip 20%. And so if I give them a 20% tip, then we can continue doing business. And so that's what we're going to do.
Wow. And you've also called on your readership. So you have reader support as well.
We charge $120 a year for full access to our website, which has a lot of political commentary on it. Right now it's a crazy town in Arkansas in terms of state legislature. They're just obsessed with sex right now, trans, gay, drag, you name it. And so we have a lot of commentary, a lot of coverage. And so we have, as of this morning, we have 3,640 readers who have signed up at $120 a year. And that is financing that completely pays for our newsroom. If this had happened 2 years ago, I may not have been able to refuse that signature. But today, we're going to, as long as we keep growing our subscriptions, I think we'll be okay.
And what about other publications, other, activists, people who just want to be able to, get state contracts and not have to sign a loyalty oath to a foreign. I mean, these oaths are like, you don't even have to sign a loyalty oath to the United States to receive, state contracts. What's the significance of
every other news media in Arkansas has signed the pledge, as far as I know. It's interesting. In fact, we're going to be meeting with him next week. There was a dermatologist who was giving a paper at the University of Arkansas. And after he gave it, they told him he needed to sign this pledge not to boycott Israel, that he wouldn't do it. So they wouldn't give him his honorarium. And so it turns out that they misread the law. I think there's $1,000 floor on our law, and his honorarium was under $1,000. And so when that was finally pointed out to him, I believe he did get his honorarium. But we'll be doing a story on that coming up in the Arkansas Times.
Great. We look forward to reading that. I mean, that reminds me of the journalist Abby Martin, who was scheduled to give a keynote speech in Georgia a couple of years ago. And under that state's very similar anti-BDS measure, she had to sign a loyalty oath to Israel in order to receive the honorarium. And she went ahead and sued. Suhad, I want to bring you in a little bit. Let's talk about the ways that similar anti-BDS laws are being applied in other states. There are 35 states now which have passed this kind of measure, but many have been challenged by civil rights advocates. The film Boycott focuses on Arkansas, but also Texas, where that measure was taken to court by a speech pathologist, Bahia Amawi, and in Arizona, where an attorney working with incarcerated people, Michael Jordan, challenged that state's measure in court. And both Bahia and Michael and their attorneys were able to convince the courts that these were direct affronts to their First Amendment rights. Can you talk a little bit about how these measures play out and how Allen's case is just one of many?
Absolutely. So, you know, our team at Just Vision has been following this story since the murmurings of the anti-boycott laws began in the U.S., understanding that as they started to spread both in the United States and Europe, that they were driven and being mirrored and inspired by measures in Israel and driven by the Israeli government. We also understood that these laws quickly would become a potential template to silence dissent on a whole range of issues. And I think the first thing to kind of do here is to take a little bit of a step back. What's happening? Why are these laws coming into play? And on what we're seeing as a team, we've been doing this work for about 20 years. Americans are increasingly understanding that the situation on the ground in Israel and Palestine is unjust and want to take action. And, you know, we actually just saw 2022's Gallup poll cite that there are major increases in sympathies with Palestinians across the United States, and Democrats are actually shifting toward greater sympathies for Palestinian rights for the first time. And it's really the shift in debate that's causing a shift in strategy by Israel in the U.S. and globally. And when you can't win a debate, what do? You've got to shut it down. And so that's effectively what these anti-boycott laws are trying to do, whether by hook or by crook, they're going to chill dissent on Palestinian rights. And so when we see the ratcheting up of what's happening on the ground in Israel, Palestine, when we see the situation and the violence toward Palestinians continue to go unchecked, it's very natural that audiences, certainly in the United States and globally, want to find ways of meaningful solidarity with Palestinians. And we've seen this across time. We've seen this in South Africa and beyond. So a lot of what's happening makes sense in context. A government who cannot control the debate that is going great lengths to shut it down. And there is a lot to fight. And I think this is where Allen's story intersects with a whole range of stories. We had the chance to interview and come to know all of the plaintiffs that had been challenging the laws at the time. So Abby Martin, Bahia Amawi, Mikhail Jordal, and beyond, who said, enough, you're not going to be taking our free speech rights. And luckily, all of those plaintiffs have won their cases. As Allen mentioned, federal judges consistently across the country have said, these laws are blatantly unconstitutional. At the same time, what's happening, we're seeing anti-boycott laws that are copycat laws being used to target other issue areas. So in 2021, in the spring of 2021, we began to see anti-boycott laws that are meant to shield the fossil fuels industry and the firearms industries emerge in places like Texas, Oklahoma, Alaska, and beyond. At the end of December 2022, we actually saw the copycat bills expand one more time to take aim at those who are concerned with abortion access, workplace equity, and transgender people's rights. And we just saw this week that Texas introduced a new bill that's actually meant to take aim at those who are concerned with immigrant rights by shielding boycotts of companies that contract with ICE. And what we knew from the get-go was that there are no exceptions on issue areas. So often Palestine is treated exceptionally in our domestic politics, where anything as it relates to Israel-Palestine is given a rubber stamp by Democrats and Republicans alike. That's how these bills got passed in the first place. But there are no exceptions. There's only templates. And that's exactly what we're seeing with the spread to fossil fuels, firearms, abortion, and so on. And so that's where we are today. With the Supreme Court decision not to hear Allen's case, it does mean that the law of the land and everywhere except the states under the Eighth Circuit's jurisdiction continues to be that we have a right to boycott. That's an important thing to note. At the same time, it means that this fight is going to continue to play out in the lower courts across the country and in our backyards. And so that's the state of play currently. And it's also part of the reason that as a team at Just Vision and as filmmakers and journalists, it was so important to us to make sure that stories like Allen's sees the light of day so that people understand what's taking place in real time while we still have a chance to fight it.
Right. Thanks for that. And I do want to go to a clip of Bahia Amaoui, the speech pathologist in Texas, speaking in the film about the right to boycott, and then we'll come right back.
I have a lot of family members that still reside in the occupied territory. I know, and I've seen firsthand the injustice and inequality that goes on there. They close off main roads, only permitting Israelis to drive on those roads. Basically, the core idea is to make it as hard as possible for them to function and to have any livelihood at all. Then you have school closures and arresting young children.
He is just a child. Why are you taking him? Kill him!
And I could not, you know, stay quiet and just go on with my life. Well, I know that this law is going to make it okay to continue this kind of oppression against the Palestinians.
That was Bahia Amaoui, a speech pathologist in Texas who successfully challenged that state's anti-BDS law a couple of years ago. And let's talk about more about the film and kind of the background here of the, you know, how these laws were introduced and passed around the U.S. In the film, Israel's Ministry of Strategic Affairs was highlighted. This is a body of the Israeli government tasked with crushing BDS actions and organizing around the world and working directly with foreign governments, including U.S. lawmakers, to do this. The ministry even admitted in 2017 to working through front groups that, quote, do not want to expose their connection with the state. Today, the ministry has been somewhat folded into the Israeli foreign ministry, but its former head, Gilad Erdan, who is now Israel's ambassador to the U.S. and the U.N., who once denied that Israel had anything to do with these U.S. laws, took credit a few years ago for passing these laws. He said, quote, our efforts are producing results. 27 U.S. states now have counter-BDS legislation. Let's give a hand to all the governors and state legislators who supported this law. They deserve it. Let's talk about the role that Israeli government officials and U.S.-based Israel lobby groups have played in influencing or orchestrating restrictions of civil rights in the U.S. I mean, it's just, you know, if any other foreign government, the enemy of the day is Russia, for example, if Russian, you know, lobby groups and ministers had been pushing for legislation here in the U.S., we wouldn't hear the end of it. Can you talk a little bit about how the Israeli government is influencing U.S. politics right now?
Sure. You know, in the case of the anti-boycott laws, and you already mentioned the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, so let's start there. You know, in the research that we did around these anti-boycott bills, we really wanted to understand whose interests were driving this and how did they come into being. And through that research, it brought us back to the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, which, for those who are listening, is a ministry under the Israeli government that was set up with a stated goal of combating the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement and any efforts to delegitimize the state of Israel globally. That's quite broad. What we also learned was that the Ministry of Strategic Affairs went ahead and wanted to fund efforts like the anti-boycott laws in places like the United States and Europe. And as you alluded to, Nora, organizations in the U.S. understood that this looked really bad. In fact, it could come into tension with American law around FARA or the Foreign Agent Registration Act if they took money directly from the Israeli government. So the Israeli government, in a very open public hearing with the Knesset, actually deliberates on what are they going to do about it. And what they land on is that they would set up a non-governmental organization called CONCERT, where they would funnel the funds so that they could fuel these efforts in the United States. And there were many organizations that they funded that we tracked in our story boycott, including Christians United for Israel, the Israel Allies Foundation. And that brings us to the lobbying groups here in the United States and the various interest groups that are converging around these anti-boycott laws and what's happening on Israel-Palestine. What we learned was that Christian evangelical organizations that take a fundamentalist view of Christianity and literally reads modern day Israel as biblical Israel, and therefore the Jews must return for the second coming to emerge, have aligned with your traditional Israel lobbying groups around these anti-boycott bills. And a third interest group that has come into the mix, that's actually the engine for the spread of these bills quickly across the country, is ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. For those who are unfamiliar with ALEC, they are behind a number of regressive laws in this country, from stand your ground laws to voting ID laws and beyond. Their ultimate aim is to align conservative legislative interests with corporate interests. And so that's how they step into that picture.
Alan, I want to come back to you. You know, being a publisher in the South of the U.S., you know, and with these kinds of lawmakers who have this very evangelical fundamentalist and actually anti-Semitic, connection to supporting Israel at all costs. How do you even navigate as not just a publisher of a local newspaper, but as someone who is from Arkansas, when you see these, you know, Christians United for Israel, for example, and these lawmakers who are doing the bidding of this, like, you know, fanatical evangelical belief?
There's been a tremendous growth in the evangelical movement during the last couple of decades, particularly in the South. It's just something we have to deal with. I mean, it's driving right now. The legislature is just absolutely absorbed with trans and LGBTQ issues right now, making it a felony to be, they're trying to make it a felony to be trans, just crazy stuff. But all this is driven by their reading of the Bible. And Senator Bart Hester, who introduced the anti-BDS bill, is an evangelical Christian. And he explained that, we have to support Israel because we cannot have the second coming and we cannot have the destruction of the earth and Armageddon until Israel regains its borders, its biblical borders under King David. To me, that's the religious fantasy that's driving, it's hocus pocus that's driving policy. And we need to be talking about roads and education and not about bathroom bills and anti-BDS bills. So you just deal with it. It's part of our culture. And it's not everybody by any means. Fortunately, Little Rock is a blue island in a red state. And that's where we are. So, but it still affects us, and it's still rough sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine. The film is now out on streaming platforms, and we recently reviewed it on the Electronic Intifada. Suhad, how has Boycott been received so far, and what kinds of conversations do you hope that it sparks around the U.S. and elsewhere around the world as other countries face similar restrictions on free speech in order to shield Israel from criticism or application of human rights law?
Thank you for the question, Nora. We created this film understanding that part of the reason these anti-boycott bills could pass and pass so quickly was because there was a lack of public scrutiny on them. And so our aim with creating this film was to stir up a conversation, to make sure our journalists and our media outlets are covering this story, but covering it accurately with an understanding of the implications of these laws on real people and on our broader rights as Americans. And also to make sure that decision makers were aware of what this meant for our constitutional rights, and that everyday people and communities across the country and around the globe had a tool to organize in the face of these laws being introduced in their backyards. But importantly, I think even to take this a step further, to really start asking the question, how are these laws passing? What is it about the culture that we have in our political environment and around Israel that is allowing for bills like these to pass and to catch us on our heels, right? And I think what's been meaningful is that this story has been really embraced across the world. We were very fortunate to be able to debut the film in places like South by Southwest in Texas, Hot Docs in Canada, a number or dozens of film festivals across the country and around the globe. And in the fall, we began what is our community and educational outreach campaign with this film, where we're working to reach students, activists, educators, journalists, decision makers, community and faith leaders, and to equip organizers with a story like this one to use in their organizing efforts locally, whether that's in places like Minnesota or in places like the United Kingdom, where similar bills are being introduced and expected to drop any day now. And so to date, we've had about more than 125 in-person screenings. We're really glad that the film is now available for people to be able to watch it in their homes with their friends and loved ones and communities. And we're going to keep campaigning on this story, knowing that these bills aren't going to go away and that we have a lot of work to do. And we've also seen some really meaningful progress, right? I think we've seen outlets really start to pick up the story, MSNBC. We see the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times. We've seen allies grow around what's happening on the anti-boycott bills. People who are concerned with dissent really stepping into the mix, people who are understanding this as a fundamental attack on our democratic freedoms, and really understanding that it's starting to necessitate joining forces across communities to really work to challenge these bills. We've also found that, you know, that people are just both absolutely shocked that this is happening, right? Time and time again, every audience we've screened for is in dismay that our political leaders think that they can get away with curbing our ability to speak. And so we know that this is a kind of classical instance where our political leaders have acted in ways that are not aligned with our interests or what the people want. And that with stories like this one and efforts like yours to help bring attention to these, we believe there's a long way we can go in creating change and a different kind of conversation on this.
Thanks, Suhad. And Alan, what about you? How are you, when you speak to people about this like legal battle that you've been involved in for years now, how do you hope people in your community across the state of Arkansas respond to this film and your ongoing fight?
It's been an education for all of us, including myself. We premiered the film in Little Rock as a fundraiser for the Arkansas chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. And we had 200 people bought tickets and contributed to the ACLU. And I think Suhad was there. I think there was a sort of a sense of outrage on behalf of a lot of people. They just weren't aware of it. And the film itself got a standing ovation after it showed. So it does move people. It's very affecting. And but again, it is just so remote from Arkansas. I mean, the whole idea of Israeli foreign policy and Palestinian rights, there are no Palestinians that live here to speak of. So it's just really remote for us. And but the film has been very, very effective, and people reacted to it very much like I hoped they would.
We have to leave it there. You've been listening to an Electronic Intifada podcast on the growing assault on the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement in our federal and state legislatures. To date, 36 states have adopted laws, executive orders, or resolutions designed to discourage boycotts against Israel. Separately, the U.S. Congress has considered anti-boycott legislation in reaction to the BDS movement. The Senate passed S-1, which contains anti-boycott provisions, on January 28th of 2019 by a vote of 74-19. The House passed a resolution condemning the boycott of Israel on July 24th, 2019, by a vote of 398-17. No federal law was adopted. The main objection to laws was that they might violate the First Amendment. The Supreme Court, however, effectively rejected this argument when it refused to hear a challenge to the appeals court ruling that the anti-boycott law in Arkansas was not unconstitutional. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here every week at the same time and place. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. To access our permanent archive to hear any of our past broadcasts, go to truthandjusticeradio.org, all one word, truthandjusticeradio.org, and click on This Week in Palestine Archive. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is John Roberts, wishing you a good morning.